couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Haunted Mansion, Talk to Me, Theater Camp, Sympathy for the Devil, and Good Omens Season 2. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look at Jury Duty. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's kick off the news with a look back at Barbieheimer. And, you know, I am a big enough man to admit when I was wrong. I did not think that the Barbieheimer phenomenon was going to be as big as it was. Because my idea was, I'm like, who wants to spend 5 hours in a movie theater over the weekend for these disparate movies? And it's certainly not a one-to-one thing, because Barbie made about twice as much money as Oppenheimer did. Actually, probably sold more than twice as many tickets, because Oppenheimer had the advantage of being in large format and IMAX screens. Barbie ended up making $162 million over the course of the weekend, which is insane. That's the largest opening of the year so far. It's one of the highest openings ever. I didn't realize it would be such a phenomenon. But I mean, look, you know what? You make a movie for women, by women, and make it accessible to women, and also make multi-generational. Yeah, you're going to get that. So all the naysayers out there who are like, go woke, go broke, it doesn't quite work for this. You don't make $162 million your opening weekend with a flop. I mean, this opening weekend is probably more than certain movies like The Flash is going to see in its entire lifetime. Good for Greta Gerwig, good for Warner Brothers, even though Warner Brothers is kind of the bad guy right now. But good for Greta Gerwig and everybody involved, and good for Margot Robbie too, because outside of something like Suicide Squad, the first one, she really hasn't headlined a major release. A lot of her releases are middling, or they have somebody else as the starring role that propels it farther. This is going to help galvanize her as a leading lady, which she has been struggling to do for years. And I think part of the reason that she has trouble being the leading lady is she is so beautiful, it's less accessible. I think, honestly, if she were not as good of an actor as she actually is, she would have long been gone, because she's so gorgeous. You can't rationalize having a regular person, you know, some poor slob having a relationship with her. You know, Margot Robbie, this is a huge win for her. And Oppenheimer did really well, even though I was not a huge fan. There's things I like about Oppenheimer, but generally I gave it a lesser review. But, you know, hey, if people had something that made this an event for them, good for you. I'm happy you're excited. I'm happy people are at the theaters. Just, you know, here's a couple things, though. Stop saying, theaters are finally back. We're starting the summer blockbuster season. This is an aberration. I hate to be the guy who's whizzing on your cornflakes here, but this is not going to be normal. This is the aberration. This is the surprise. It's like Super Mario Brothers was a surprise. Last summer, everyone was like, Top Gun was such a big movie. Oh, theaters are back, baby. Maybe it was just Top Gun clicked with an audience. And that's what's going on with Barbie and Oppenheimer. You know, you can't have an event every weekend. This is the high mark. And it's funny, I went to go see a movie on Wednesday, and the theaters were still pretty crowded, which I haven't seen in months. So realize that this is the outlier. Barbie and Oppenheimer are the outliers. But I'll tell you, because it happened, brace yourself for some really dumb stuff coming our way now. And not because of Barbie, or not because of Oppenheimer, but because of the phenomenon that happened. Just wait. People are going to be at the studios just slathering and salivating, just waiting to start co-marketing movies. Oh, it worked for Barbenheimer. We should be able to take two diametrically opposed movies and then make people want to go see them. Expendable 4 and Paw Patrol come out on the same weekend. Are we going to get an Expendapause weekend? I mean, are people going to really try to make that happen? I say that now as a joke. But I think people are going to be start doing, even though it was just counter programming, like I said before, you know, like 15 years ago, The Dark Knight and Mamma Mia came out on the same weekend. Nobody tried to link those together. But the other thing that's going to be so stupid coming down the pipeline is now Mattel has said, well, because Barbie did so well. And this is how corporations and CEOs and executives look at this sort of stuff. They just look at it as a metric and they say, well, it's a classic toy and it made a lot of money. So let's take all of our classic toys and make more movies out of them. And we saw this happen when Harry Potter was big. They said, oh, books about fantasy with teenagers. Let's get all of them. And they started making, we had this deluge of movies like Aragon and City of Ember and The Mortal Instruments and all these different movies that were based on teen books like Harry Potter, Inkheart. I mean, and all of them flopped because that's not what it was. Maybe it was an underserved audience, but Harry Potter sort of transcended its audience. We're literally watching it right now with multiverse movies. You know, you had that with Avengers Endgame and then Spider-Man and then The Flash. And they're like, well, The Flash is going to make tons of money. And then it didn't. And it suddenly blows that theory apart. Mattel is now going to be doing a Polly Pockets movie. And they want to do Hot Wheels and Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Didn't we do a Rock'em Sock'em Robots, that movie Real Steel that DreamWorks produced like 15 years ago? They're saying, oh, we're going to make an American Girl movie. You've made tons of American Girl movies. There are a whole bunch of made-for-TV movies. There was one with Abigail Breslin, Kit Kittredge, that came out, again, like 15 years ago. It was an American Girl movie. So Masters of the Universe, it's not toys. Hasbro did the same thing. They said, oh, well, you know, of course, we did really well with Transformers, so let's make G.I. Joe to a moderate success. And then they're like, let's make Battleship. And we all know how that went. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer is for Golda, which stars Helen Mirren and comes to theaters on August 25th.
In my day, they stood for the Prime Minister.
Secretary Kissinger is on the line.
Remember that I am first an American, second I am Secretary of State, and third, I am a Jew.
You forget that in Israel we read from right to left.
The American people will pay a high price for supporting Israel.
If we have to, we will fight alone.
Our troops on the canal, they're surrounded.
You rescue these boys.
Might lead to catastrophe.
This looks interesting. I do not know my Israeli history. I don't know my history of Golda as the Prime Minister of Israel. I know she existed there. A movie like this, I do know enough about Israel to know that the politics of that region is incredibly complicated. And it's very hard to make a movie about that region at that time and make it accessible to the mainstream. So I think this is more of a acting spotlight for Helen Mirren than anything else. The next one I want to hit is The Exorcist Believer, which is coming to theaters on October 13th.
Angela, can you tell your dad how long you were gone?
A few hours.
Baby, you've been gone 3 days.
What did you say?
I didn't say nothing.
I thought I heard you say something.
Wherever those girls went, they brought something back with them.
The body and blood of Jesus Christ.
Have some experience with possession.
Yes, more than I'd like.
Look, there's been, well, two good Exorcist movies. The first one, obviously, is a classic. The third one, which was Legion, directed by William Peter Blatty, actually, is really good as well. It's got some great stuff to it. Both books, the original Exorcist and its sequel, Legion, which it's turned into Exorcist 3, are quite different from the movies they became. I mean, to the point that I think the original Exorcist book, she wasn't really possessed by a demon. It was, she was mentally ill. So I'm curious to see this new Exorcist movie. I think it's neat that they're bringing back Ellen Burstyn, but there has not been a great track record for Exorcist sequels and reboots. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Talk to Me and Theater Camp.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Theater Camp. This is in limited release. It actually opened in like the big cities like New York, LA, Chicago a couple weeks ago. But it's finally coming around to my neck of the woods, so I had a chance to check it out. And I figured we'd talk about it now. This mockumentary follows a struggling theater camp and all the drama that takes place on and off the stage.
Welcome, auditioners.
You guys are so talented, so unbelievable. This will break you. This will fully destroy you.
Congratulations on being the most talented kids at camp.
These people are really weird.
Sad news, I will not be doing piercings anymore in the hut because there's a narc amongst us. Cassie has narked. Totally fine.
We only have 3 weeks to create a masterpiece. It's on you now. All on you.
Now, I'm a fan of mockumentaries. I think they can be overdone. Whenever there's a popular one, when you have like movies, like Christopher Guest used to do great mockumentaries. I mean, going all the way back to Spinal Tap, although Rob Reiner directed that one. But Christopher Guest then took the reins and did stuff like Waiting for Guffman, and he did The Mighty Wind. And I think the last one that was done by that group was Mascots, which you can actually find on Netflix. But mockumentaries are also a dangerous thing because they're sort of like found footage in the sense that you can do them on a very low budget. They don't take a lot of special effects because the whole point is you're supposed to be just a cheap little documentary group. And Theater Camp, as I understand it, I don't know for sure because I've never gone down and found the original source material, but I believe this started as a short film. And Ben Platt was involved in it from the beginning. And you know what's funny? Just an interesting thing about Ben Platt. He is, along with Lily Rose Depp, sort of that poster child for Nepo Babies. Because his father's Mark Platt, who's a big producer. And most people don't know who Ben Platt is. I mean, he's shown up in a couple things, but the biggest thing people noticed him in was when he was in Dear Evan Hansen a couple years ago. And he was way too old to play the role. And it showed that he flexed his familial muscles to get the role, because in his 20s he was playing a high school student because he originated the role on Broadway, I believe, or at least he played the role on Broadway, and he wanted that role. He wanted to be in the movie, but he was just too old and he looked ridiculous. And then they did like a de-aging process on him, which was inconsistent. That's the problem with doing de-aging, is it's good for a picture or a clip, but to consistently do it throughout a movie is very, very difficult. It would have been a lot cheaper to just hire a different actor. But no, Ben Platt wanted it, and he got it from his dad. And there's a journalist on Twitter I had read, and I'm not going to call it X, by the way. I'm not calling it X. It's Twitter. It's always going to be Twitter. I mean, this is not Prince, who changed his name to a symbol. It's still Twitter. There's still tweets. I'm not going to say, I X'd the other day. That's dumb. Elon Musk can go suck an egg. Anyways, somebody asked some journalist during the press coverage, obviously before the actor strike, asked Ben Platt during his interviews about the Nepo baby thing. He said, do you think that's a fair term? And he was silenced by the PR rep. And that's kind of what the publicist is supposed to do. But that's really for kids or people who have problems. You know, if you're like sort of a train wreck and you need a publicist to sort of keep you going. But Ben Platt should have been able to answer that question. And he should have. He should have said, no, I'll answer it. And this is how you answer it, Ben, if you're listening. You don't avoid the question because that just makes you look worse. Because then it does make it look like you're being handled. What you do is you say, look, obviously I've had opportunities that not everybody gets. And I have access that not everybody has. I'm very grateful for those. And I think I do the best job I can. And I think I earned my keep on this movie. I mean, you just say it like that. You'd be very gracious and say, look, I'm very fortunate to be in the situation I'm in. But anyway, so he didn't answer that, but it's neither here nor there. And they made the short film and then they decided to make it into a full blown feature. And here's where the problem comes. As funny as it is, and there's gags and jokes and extreme personalities. I was a theater kid. I grew up doing theater all the way into, you know, grade school and then middle school and high school and even some in college. And my kids were theater kids. My two oldest were heavily involved in theater in high school. So I feel very close to that, but I also realize that in theater and the arts in general, a lot of people look at those as a sink for misfits, because that's true. A lot of misfits end up, especially in theater, because you get a lot of the quote-unquote weirdos. You get the ones who don't fit somewhere else, the ones who aren't the jocks, for example. And it can be a very welcoming community, but it can also be kind of caustic as well. There are some extreme personalities in theater. So what they do with these characters, even though they have some very funny moments and some very clever things go on, the characters are so annoying. Their idiosyncrasies just get on my nerves so much. And I start having flashbacks to unpleasant times when I was in theater and when my kids were in theater. And that's a danger. You see, in a short, you don't necessarily need that plot and character change. You don't need that arc. Features need that story arc for the main character. They have to go through some sort of change. With a short, you can just have a slice of life thing that just drops in there and it's easier to do. And by putting it into a long form program like this, all the characters were annoying and it was just unpleasant to be around them. And that made it very hard to watch the movie, even though it has a cute little uplifting things going on and it has some nice parts to it. It's just there are times when I'm just like, oh, I've known people like that and I can't stand spending time with them. But that's just me. Like I said, I come from a traumatized past, I guess. Anyway, I mean, it's hilarious in concept, but it's just frustrating in execution because the extreme characters and their idiosyncrasies just get in the way of likability. So because of that, I'm going to have to say theater camps kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now, we're running out of time here, but I want to talk about the next movie really quickly. It's called Talk to Me. A group of friends discover how to conjure spirits by using an embalmed hand, but they face terrifying consequences.
Put your hand on it. Now say... Talk to me.
What did the hand feel like?
Felt amazing. I could see and feel everything on the other side. Still been seeing stuff?
You mean saying stuff?
What if we opened the door but we didn't shut it?
This is one of those acquisitions from A24, and I've heard a lot of great things about this. They even screened it. It's just there was a conflicting screening date. So I really want to see Talk to Me. I think it looks like a real clever horror film. And you know, also kudos to A24. News broke this week that A24 basically said to SAG-AFTRA and the WGA, they said, we're going to honor all of your requests. If you do work with our studio, we will put this in our contracts. And you know what? If a studio like A24 can do it, Disney can certainly afford to do it. It's just people don't like to give up their bonuses and yachts. I mean, and I know some people are like, oh, it's more complicated than that. No, it really isn't. When you got corporate bosses making hundreds of millions of dollars and you're paying out literal pennies for residuals, yeah, it does kind of work that way. So anyways, I can't give a rating or anything for Talk to Me because I didn't see it, but I do want to. So I will probably be checking that out in the coming weeks, but I need to move on. And next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Haunted Mansion and Sympathy for the Devil. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Haunted Mansion, or Disney's Haunted Mansion. You wouldn't want to assume that it's somebody else's Haunted Mansion. This is not Clive Barker's Haunted Mansion. It's Disney's. Disney's Haunted Mansion. A grieving man agrees to help a single mother and her child who have moved into a haunted home.
Welcome home.
I know this place isn't as... warm as I'd hoped, but I'm going to light a vanilla candle and it's going to be a game changer.
Will it though?
We're out.
This mansion is unhinged. She needs all the help she can get.
You want to be a hero?
Pass.
$2,000.
What's the address?
This is actually the third time. A lot of people are saying it's the second time, but it's really the third time they've done a Haunted Mansion movie. The first one, obviously, was in 2003 with Eddie Murphy. It's not great, but it's not as bad as everybody said it was. It was kind of a critical dud. And it was at that time that Eddie Murphy was just slumming it and also trying to figure out what he was doing. He was trying to shed his bad boy image, the Axel Foley type character that he had through the 80s and the 90s. And so he's doing a lot of family stuff. But this was in a dark time in Eddie Murphy's career, and it was okay. I remember thinking it was okay, but it felt very Disney-fied. It felt like a Disney Channel movie. The second time they did it was just a couple years ago. They did a Muppet version, and that's actually quite good. It's on Disney Plus. You can still see it. I have to admit, I've never ridden the Haunted Mansion ride. My parents didn't have enough money to go to the Disney parks when we were kids. But I've heard about it, and I've seen enough things about it. It's like I've never ridden the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, but I feel like I have after seeing enough background video of it and then, of course, seeing the Pirates of the Caribbean movies and knowing the parts that they put in from the ride. But this is an attempt to make it a less of a Disney Channel type movie. Like I said, that first one with Eddie Murphy was very Disney Channel-like. This feels like it's aiming more for, kind of a little bit more of a mainstream audience. It actually has a PG-13 rating. I think that's more for the scariness factor. Because, I mean, you take a young enough kid that doesn't like horror movies, they're going to freak out in this film. But, I mean, it's still meant to be a family-friendly movie. And it also has a really good cast. Whereas, like, the Eddie Murphy one was, I mean, it was really just Eddie Murphy was the headliner. But this one, you've got Lakeith Stanfield playing this guy. He's a depressed tour guide in New Orleans, and he gets caught up into this ghost hunting thing. You've got Rosario Dawson playing the mother, and she's got a son. And this kid who plays the son is actually quite good. He kind of steals the show. Danny DeVito's in it. Owen Wilson's in it. Tiffany Haddish is in it. She's not very good. She kind of just phones in her lines in this one. But you know, I mean, Owen Wilson and Danny DeVito are very game for it. And it's a cute story. I mean, it follows them basically trying to hunt these ghosts. And whenever somebody comes in the house, they're kind of infected and they take the ghosts home with them, or one of the ghosts will attach themselves to them. And so they all have to get in there and try and stop them. And like I said, all the different parts, you know, the busts that sing in the hallway that, or the room that gets really tall and the pictures on the wall and the ghosts with the axe and then of course the hatbox ghost. You have all these different ghosts that populate the ride and they've brought them to life. And for the most part, it feels organic. Not 100%, but I mean, it does feel like this story was written, because that was always the struggle with adapting like a ride. You know, like when they did Pirates of the Caribbean, they essentially said, okay, we're going to have this one scene and that's where it's going to have all the stuff from the ride. And then we're just going to do all the rest. You know, we're just going to do our own story of Pirates of the Caribbean. Whereas this, they try and make this adapt the ride. I mean, the rides don't have plots, but, you know, they made a way to make it work. But that does kind of get in its way as well, because as good as the actors are, and the actors are game, and they generally are very have a fun time with the role. They seem to be having a good time. And they even have smaller bit parts, like Winona Ryder has a small part in it, and Daniel Levi has a small part in it. And they're fun, and you can tell they're just like, I'll do it. But there are parts of the movie that are just kind of overblown, and they go too far, not go too far with the scariness, but there's a certain part where it's just jump scare after jump scare. Because at a certain point, you can't go too terrifying because you're making a family movie. So they just do more lighting effects and jump scares. And that just, it gets tiresome after a while. And it detracts from the real stars, which are the human people who are actually quite good. The cast is quite good. So there's some funny moments, but there's also parts of it that, I don't know, feel mundane, or they feel forced or throwaway. It's like right at that point where this could have gone to Disney Plus, and I still think it would have been an appropriate production. I don't know what the budget was, because at this point, someplace like Disney should be able to have enough of the technology to just kind of fill up an entire movie with this and keep it under a reasonable budget. So, you know, it's better than the 2003 version, but not as good as the Muppets from 2021. And this has some fun moments, but wears thin with overblown VFX and jump scares. I enjoyed it. It's something, if I had kids, my kids were younger, I'd take them, they enjoy it. I would have loved to have seen this in Halloween. Why is this being released in the middle of a July heat wave? If it were released at Halloween, it would have felt good. If I would have walked out of the theater and the leaves were falling and it was dark out and it was, you know, I would have appreciated, but I come outside into a blast furnace. And also the air conditioner wasn't working in the theater I saw it. So it's apparently not just Sound of Freedom that's happening. So anyways, the Haunted Mansion, I'd say kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Sympathy for the Devil. No, not the song. It's a movie. A man on his way to the hospital for the birth of his child is abducted by a gangster seeking retribution.
Sir, my wife is in the hospital. She's about to give birth.
Drive.
This is a family emergency.
I'm your family emergency now.
Whatever it is that you want, it's yours. Is this the wife?
David, where are you?
I mean, are you happy? You and your wife have a happy marriage?
Stick away from my family.
That's rude. You interrupting me. Don't.
This is a one-on-one piece. It's and a lot of times taking place in a very limited location. Joel Kinnaman plays this guy whose wife's getting ready to give birth. He's on his way to the hospital. And Nicolas Cage plays this insane, crazy, is there any other type of Nicolas Cage character, gangster who hops in his back seat and pulls a gun on him and tells him to just start driving. And he's abducting him. And of course, Joel Kinnaman's character, he's like, what's going on? He doesn't know what's happening. He just wants him to drive, and he doesn't know why he wants him to drive. And so that's the whole story, is finding out why he's being kidnapped, who he thinks he is. Is he really this person he thinks he is? And, there's all these veiled mysteries about it. Now, with any Nicolas Cage movie, you get what you expect from Nicolas Cage, him being crazy and over the top and doing his thing. He sort of tries to do a Boston accent, and I give him credit for, at least being consistent with that. I don't know if it's a good Boston accent, but at times it almost sounds like he's doing a Nicolas Cage version of Christopher Walken. I don't know. The accents are weird in this. And there are elements to the Nicolas Cage character that are revealed throughout that you're like, okay, well, now that makes sense when he didn't do something earlier. My biggest issue with it is I've seen a lot of these kind of movies. The people being kidnapped, even something like Collateral. Remember that Michael Mann movie with Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise? That's kind of a similar thing of a guy getting in a car, holding somebody at gunpoint and making him drive him around. You don't know what they're doing. But there's been so many of them, whether they're in a car or whether they're in a house or whether they're finding them at a restaurant somewhere. I've seen this scenario done a lot. And that's the thing that takes a lot of the uniqueness out of it. I mean, they don't put enough newness to this to make it work. Because no matter what happens at the end, no matter how they resolve it, you're like, well, that was kind of obvious either way. It doesn't keep you guessing if all you're going to do is flip a coin. So that was my biggest issue with it. I mean, I think it was effectively done, and I think both actors really give it their all. Because Nicolas Cage, he gives his expected over-the-top performance, and the film has some intense moments, but the story just seems a bit too tired and predictable. So I'm going to have to say Sympathy for the Devil kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Good Omens Season 2 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Jury Duty. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews. This one's not a movie review, it's a TV review. And we're going to be talking about Good Omens Season 2. The demon Crowley teams up again with the angel Azrael when an amnesiac angel Gabriel turns up missing.
The archangel Gabriel has disappeared.
I think he's gone to Earth.
Hello, hello, hello.
Good morning, officer.
Exactly. I'm a human police officer.
It's just Aziraphale.
The traitor.
And his grumpy friend, Mr. Crowley.
The demon.
Oh, I suppose that explains the grumpiness. Oh, and of course, his assistant.
Hi there.
Ah, Gabriel! What's he doing here?
I don't know.
What's happened to him?
I don't know.
I really enjoyed the first season of Good Omens. I like Neil Gaiman's stuff. Neil Gaiman's weird enough. And Terry Pratchett having a handle in that, he tends to bring a little bit more of a lightheartedness, because Neil Gaiman stuff can be pretty heavy. You know, it can be pretty dour and stressful to watch. But throwing in some lightness from Terry Pratchett really kind of helped that story. And the stars of this are the stars of this. You've got David Tennant playing Crowley, and you've got Michael Sheen playing Aziraphale. And I love both of them, and they're both so very different performers in general. Not just very different performers, but they play very different characters. And that's what makes this work, is they do complement each other perfectly. And after seeing the first season of Good Omens, I went out and I watched the series staged, which is the two of them doing a Zoom call trying to arrange for a production. And they even did a season of staged during COVID because they could just film it in their own homes, because it was just the two of them on Zoom calls all the time. And you can tell that Tennant and Sheen get along really well, and they work well together, and they make this thing click. One of the things that's a problem when you have a series based on like a book, especially something as, I guess you could say, sweeping. I mean, the original first season was about the birth of the Antichrist. It's literally ushering in the end of the world. And, you know, so you get to the end of that season and you're like, can you do more? Well, they can. And in a way, it's kind of bigger, because it's a problem going on with heaven, with the Archangel Gabriel gone. But it's less of a big deal, because it's not like the earth is facing, you know, the end of times as it's written in the holy books for all of eternity. So I appreciate the smaller scale they do in a certain way. There's some elements to this that aren't as good. They do develop a couple new characters that are sort of like side characters, and they're okay. In particular, there's this little relationship between this one shopkeeper and this woman who runs a coffee shop. That one seems a little trite and forced, but a lot of the other relationships, because they're not trying to build the world, and that's one of the things when you get into something and you're dealing with heaven and hell and the afterlife and different realms and different creatures and the divine and the wicked. You have to spend a lot of time world building, and a lot of time was spent on that in the first season. You don't have to world build in this season, and you can just kind of jump in and have them doing their own little thing. And that's what kind of makes it work. And that's kind of what makes it a little more intimate, in it just being Crowley and Aziraphale's story. And I think that works. And, you know, what's, unfortunately, they only gave us, I think they gave us five episodes. Well, there's like, I think, six episodes, and the first couple come out this week, and then they're going to drop a new one every week. But I haven't seen the season finale, so I don't know how it wraps up, but it feels like a more fun show. And the other thing is because Jon Hamm plays Gabriel, and he doesn't remember he's Gabriel. He basically shows up as a naked man at Aziraphale's bookshop. And he doesn't know anything. And so they're trying to figure out why he's doesn't remember and what he should remember and how it fits in. And heaven's trying to find him, and the demons are discovering that he's not there. And it's a lot of fun. And they have some diverted episodes. Like, there's this one episode where they take the guys from the League of Gentlemen. I've talked about that on this show. Rhys Shearsmith and Mark Pendleton and Mark Gatiss. They have an episode with the three of them, focusing on them, and that's kind of neat to see. It's nice to see the League of Gentlemen get some work together as another piece that they can, you know, playing in that darkness that they always do, and bringing Gatiss back into the frame. Because, you know, Shearsmith and Pendleton do the stuff like Inside Number 9, and they've done other things together, but it's nice to have the gang back together. But I gotta say, I mean, I really enjoyed a good, almost better than season one, because like I said, there's so much world building that needs to be established in season one, and in season two, you can just jump right in, and you don't need to get the backstory of these, even though they give you more backstory to them, but it fits into the framework of the show better, with a little more ease. So arguably just as clever as the first season, this next chapter brings the quirkiness of the divine backdrop to charming life. Good Omens Season 2 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Jury Duty. I'm a little behind the curve on this one because this came out in April. It's on Freevee, which is the free version of Prime. So you just have to have an Amazon account and then you can watch Freevee. This Emmy-nominated comedy follows a single juror who doesn't know he's in a mockumentary.
You are now the jury in the matter of Hillgrove versus Morris.
When they say jury of your peers, I think that's accurate.
I mean, how long does this normally take? Have you just done this before? You.
Juror number 54.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm going to be upset if I don't get on the jury.
Ready, guys? Here we go.
Sorry for the paparazzi. This is a problem.
You're sequestered.
I Googled it. It's isolated.
Isolated.
Separated. Again, I'm not an actor, so I don't know what it takes.
Yeah, who knows?
Like I said, I didn't watch this when it originally was out. And then when it hit, I heard a lot of good buzz about it. And then it got 3 Emmy nominations. And I'm like, for a Freevee show? Are you kidding me? Freevee got Emmy nominations, and that kind of made me look, and I was just curious about it, but I never got around to watching it. It was kind of on my list, and now the Emmys have been pushed because of the strikes, but I finally decided to check this one out. I was watching another movie on Freevee, and I got about halfway through it, and I was like, oh, it's kind of a heavy movie, so I wanted to watch something lighthearted before I went to bed. And they had thrown an ad for Jury Duty at the beginning of that, and I go, fine, I'll watch Jury Duty, and I got sucked in. I watched 4 episodes the first day, and it is hilarious, because the whole idea is they make it like there's a regular jury process going on, and they bring this guy into a jury, but everybody is an actor. It's sort of like if you were filming Parks and Recreation episodes, and there was one person there who thought they really worked in a park or recreation department. And so as this thing starts, some weird things happen, like in the first episode, some funny things, some bizarre things, and it just gets stranger and stranger as it goes on. But the guy in this is, he's kind of like that frog in slowly boiling water. It gets stranger and weirder and more extreme. But he doesn't realize it because it's just slowly building. And they actually have this trial they're going through. And like I said, everybody's an actor except him. And it's very, very funny. And the guy's a good guy too. He seems like a nice guy. You know, he comes across really, really good. And I don't even want to say some of the outrageous stuff that goes on. It works. And it's crazy enough that you can see that stuff happen in real life without realizing, you know, it's not so over the top it'd be impossible to happen, because people are weird. And so I've done Jury Duty, and Jury Duty, you do have this weird camaraderie with everybody. You get to know people because you're stuck in the same room with them for a long time. I mean, I wasn't sequestered. I could go home at night, but it was throughout the week or two of the trial I was on. You got to know some people, and you had all different types on the jury, and they do a great job spreading it around and having the people not be too crazy. But it's also got a real kind of heart to it. Cause like I said, the guy's a nice guy. And like one of the big names in it, they've got James Marsden plays him a version of himself who has jury duty. And he plays a nice guy, but he's also very egotistical and self-centered and only worries about himself and his career. And, you know, once you get past the fact of meeting somebody famous and they're in the room with you every day, then you just kind of get used to it. You're just like, because it's in L.A. And he's like, well, he's just an actor. He works here. But I was surprised at how much I got sucked in. And it's 8 episodes long. There's 7 episodes of the show. And then there's 1 episode at the end after they've revealed everything. And there are a couple episodes where it starts to bog down in the middle. I'm glad they only made it 7. They probably could have gone with about 5, maybe even 6. 7 might be just a hair too long, but it was a great little short run comedy. I really enjoyed it. I was sucked in. I wish there were like 5 more seasons of this. I hope it wins an Emmy. It's warm-hearted and outrageous. This show features some hilarious moments, like a mashup of Parks and Recreation and Candid Camera. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! And that's it for this show. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Meg the Trench. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.